Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Lance Metal, I am John Schmelk, caught by surprise 24-7. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat. Thanks so much for joining us. First few minutes of the show will be on Twitter. Then you can watch the rest of the show on Giants.com on the Giants mobile app. We're going to get to your calls pretty quick today because there's not a whole lot going on. And we have a guest coming your way at 12:30, Jeff Risden, who covers the NFL draft for Real GM. We'll give us a little combine preview as we get ready for Indianapolis next week. And just as a reminder, we'll have three shows from Indianapolis next week on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, 2 hours each. Lance and Paul Dottino will be with you next Monday and Tuesday. And Lance, again, just not a lot of news right now. It's a quiet time for the NFL, but a couple things I want to point to on NFL.com, which I think are a little bit interesting. I know a lot of Giant fans are talking about the offensive line right now. So Bucky Brooks today did announce his top six NFL offensive lineman prospects coming out of college, and I'll just run through them real quick. Number one, he is Ryan Ramczyk out of Wisconsin, who has that hip surgery. He's not going to do anything at the combine, more than likely, but we'll get a medical check on him to see what he can do in terms of getting back and getting healthy and on the field. He had hip surgery after the season was over. He only played 1 year at Wisconsin, transferring from Wisconsin Stevens Point. I'll just read real quick his summary. Great technical skills, one of the few edge blockers capable of moving defenders off the ball, good balance, good technician. He could be a franchise tackle based on this. So very high on Ryan Ramczyk, but again, the injury lands and that only 1 year at Division I of Wisconsin are two red flags.
Plus, he also throws out some team fits that he sees, and he has the Panthers, the Bengals, and the Vikings as three potential destinations where he's also taking into consideration the scheme that the player worked within, as well as whether or not that position makes sense for those teams.
Then you have Garrett Bowles, who he terms the quote-unquote dancing bear, which usually means you have really good feet, out of Utah, but again, much like Ramczyk, he only played 1 year at Utah coming from a JUCO school. So not the strongest guy, more of an athlete. Good fits for them. He has the Broncos, Lions, and the New York Football Giants because obviously if you have really good feet, odds are you're going to be more of a left tackle. Then you have Ken Robinson, who's kind of the opposite. His pro comparison for him is actually Eric Flowers, believe it or not. The weaknesses, I'll read those because I think it's telling on why he probably will struggle to be an NFL left tackle, Lance. And again, this is Bucky Brooks on NFL.com. He lacks the athleticism, movement skills, and body control to play left tackle as a pro. Struggles against speed rushers due to slow feet and unrefined kick slide technique. That's a problem.
Yeah, especially if you get beat off the edge, and the whole point is you're supposed to be protecting the quarterback's blind side. So that's a big red flag. I mean, he comes from a prominent school in Alabama where they do run a pro-style offense. But remember, even though you're coming from a pro-style offense, now you're put on an island when you join the professional ranks, and it doesn't mean that you're going to have the same guys you played alongside and you're running the same scheme. So in the NFL, that's when you have to rely on your individual skill sets, and sometimes that doesn't always translate to a new fit and a new scheme.
And the fourth and fifth guys on this list are two guards. Forrest Lamp, who played tackle at Western Kentucky, but most people think he will go to guard in college. They have a Zach Martin comparison. I think that might be a little bit strong. I don't think Forrest Lamp's going to be a top 15 pick like Zach Martin was. And then you have Dan Feeney, the offensive guard out of Indiana. So I imagine both Feeney and Lamp would be second-round picks, just real quick there. And then a separate article by Chad Reuter on NFL.com talking about the five offensive linemen with something to prove at the combine. He has Cam Robinson as one, and I guess he thinks maybe the events – and
could
the competition could maybe alleviate some of the worries about his athleticism. And then you have Roderick Johnson out of Florida State, former left tackle, playing there. And I guess he just wants to see what he can do in terms of athleticism. And then Deion Dawkins out of Temple, obviously not the biggest school in terms of football. And then Garrett Bowles out of Utah. And he'll have to deal with a lot of questions because Bowles did have some issues as a teenager. One of the reasons he went to junior college first, off-the-field stuff, before he did, in fact, go to Utah, and he'll have to show off his strength as well. People like his mobility, but they worry about his strength, and they'll see if he can work his way into the first round. So, Lance, that's a brief look at some of the offensive linemen in the draft, and we know this is not a great offensive line draft, but there are always good players at every position if general managers can go out and find the right guys to take.
Yeah, it's a matter of doing your homework. I think a lot of guys can help their cause at the combine based on some of the things you just read with respect to the team meetings and meeting with executives. That's where I think, you know, you can learn a lot more about a player. You're not going to get much out of evaluating offensive linemen from watching the 40-yard dash. I'm sorry. It may be entertaining to watch a 300-pound guy run up and down the field, but let's face it, you're really not going to take much away. And I think you'll take away the bench press to see the strength, perhaps how that translates to the NFL. But to me, the biggest thing you take away from the combine, this is just my personal opinion, meeting with the executives face-to-face, seeing what the player's about, and perhaps running them through some scheme and putting them up on the board and trying to get them to explain some plays. That, to me, is the biggest takeaway from the combine.
Well, I also think measurements and health are important, too.
Of course.
You know, because, you know, you do want guys to make certain landmarks in terms of size and speed. And I think 40 times for receivers and cornerbacks are important.
Yeah, but not offensive linemen, like
no,
I said.
Absolutely not. By the way, thanks for joining us on Twitter. You want to watch the rest of the show, go to Giants.com or the Giants mobile app. And Lance, I know you don't want to reference a free agent story you saw on Giants.com as well, if you guys want to touch on free agency.
Yeah, Elliot Harrison wrote a piece about a week ago where he basically selected the top-tier free agents that are going to be on the market, and he then threw out some potential fits for each one of those players. Now, the two that I think relate to the Giants here based on his connections is one, obviously, JPP. Now, he said potential fits, the three teams he lists are obviously the Giants. He also lists the Lions and the Dolphins as potential destinations for JPP, and those are two teams that we haven't really thrown out, though. Miami is parting ways with Mario Williams, so perhaps they have a need for an edge rusher. It'll be interesting financially how they can work that out.
And it could be a little revenge for the Giants taking Olivier Vernon away
from
him last
year.
Then again, the Dolphins could have kept Olivier Vernon if they wanted to, but they removed the tag from him,
yep,
which allowed him to be scooped up by the New York Football
and
Giants.
And he was given the transition tag,
correct,
not the franchise tag, that they wound up rescinding. There was one other connection that he had here to the Giants, and I know this is a name that a number of fans have thrown out, Martellus Bennett.
Why are you doing this
stuff,
with
him. I'm not throwing out. I'm just using this as a reference. Realistically, I don't see it happening, and we talked a lot about tight ends yesterday, mm-hmm, John, and how the franchise's track record has been more of the, you know, up-and-coming tight ends, guys who have been backups, who have something to prove and can maybe transition into a starting role here with the Giants, like Bennett before he joined the Giants when he was the backup to Jason Witten with the Cowboys. But he does throw that out. He lists the Colts and the Rams as the first two potential fits for Martellus Bennett, and then the Giants are the third. Outside of that, all the other top-tier players, really no connections to the Giants. Kirk Cousins, Le'Veon Bell, Alshon Jeffrey are clearly the top three at their respective positions this offseason.
And then real quick, Lance Zierlein also released his mock draft 2.0 a day ago. A couple of notes. He has Cam Robinson as the first offensive lineman off the board in this draft, which I do not think will be the case when we get there. I think teams will be scared off by his lack of pass pro, which we talked about a little bit earlier. They have him going 20th to the Broncos, who do need an offensive lineman. So when you get into this draft, folks, you got to watch for teams like Denver who need offensive linemen that might pick somebody before the Giants come up. They do have the Giants picking the second offensive lineman off the board, Ryan Ramczyk, out of Wisconsin. We mentioned hip surgery, but good football player, even though he only played 1 year at Wisconsin. But that's a good program in terms of grooming offensive linemen.
Correct.
They know what they're doing. They have a great history there.
And they like to run the football there, too, which is also,
correct,
a big plus.
Also very good. And then they have the third offensive lineman in the first round. And I'm not sure we're going to get three first-round offensive linemen this year, to be honest with you, but they have Garrett Bowles, another one, a guy we previously mentioned out of Utah, going to the Houston Texans at number 25. Ready to do some calls, Lance?
Absolutely. Just one other thing that I just wanted to throw out quick, based on your mock draft, notice how, you know, we're still early in the stages. You read the review on Cam Robinson where there are a lot of question marks, yet this guy has him going as the first offensive lineman. So just another example of it's all based on the eyes of the beholder and how you view it based on what you see on film and what you see on tape. It's going to be various opinions across the board, specifically when you're talking about offensive linemen.
And again, mock drafts at this point, everyone's guessing. Nobody knows anything, especially since free agency hasn't happened yet, so you don't really know what these team needs are going to be, which obviously does affect the draft. A couple of players of note: Mitch Trubisky to the Niners at 2. They do not have the Bears picking a quarterback. They got the Jets taking Leonard Fournette, which I think is nonsensical and I don't think is going to happen, because why would you want to draft a running back when you don't have an offensive line or a quarterback
with
them?
Assuming they address those needs, obviously, in free agency. Big question marks.
I don't think it makes any sense. They have the Bills taking Deshaun Watson, which, assuming they believe that Tyrod Taylor is not going to be back, which
another
I still think is a
guy.
50-50 proposition, I suppose. O.J. Howard at 13 to the Cardinals. The Eagles taking Dalvin Cook, Not surprising to me they need a running back. They were kind of figuring things out last year. Sproles, I think, ran a little bit more than they probably would have liked.
And he got banged up.
They have Jabril Peppers at 17. I think that's way too high for him. Mike Williams, I believe that's the first wide receiver off the board to the Titans at number 18. Yes, he is. Some people think Corey Davis might be the first wide receiver off the board before Mike Williams, but they have Mike Williams here as the first guy gone. Let's see if anybody else grabs my eye here. The Giant fans won't like to see Njoku getting drafted by the Cowboys at 28, according to this mock draft. But that's where – and they have Corey Davis at 30 to the Steelers. I knew he was going to pop up somewhere. And then they have Patriots taking Forrest Lamp, one of the aforementioned offensive linemen. All right, let's do calls. 201-939-4513. Let's go to Abdul in Minneapolis. Abdul, what's going on, pal? Good to hear from you.
Hey, guys, what's up?
Doing well, pal. What's up?
So, I have two questions.
Sure.
First question slash comment. About JPP. I wonder if we, the fans and slash the team, are more in love with the idea of him than actually what he does. It seems like every year he has like four or five good games. Four games, then he gets hurt. I understand that, you know, having a edge rusher is really important, but has he really lived up to his promise? If you look at his career.
Well, I mean, if you're just looking at sack numbers, you know,
No.
Go ahead.
Everything.
Well, but there's a lot of little things and subtleties in his game, and I've said this on numerous occasions, Abdul, that do not show up in the box score, that it's hard for you to put into words or substance because you really don't have many numbers to go by. For example, a hustle play where JPP goes from the right side to the left side and fills up a gap and helps stop a run. I mean, how do you quantify that in the box score? Those are the types of plays that I've seen over the course of his career that I think it's going to be very difficult for somebody else to come in and immediately make up that gap. As far as your big picture perspective, I don't disagree with you. If you look at his narrative, he has been plagued by injuries at times before the hand injury and after, so that has been something that you have to take into consideration. And there have been times where the sacks are not always there, but I mean, I think if you look at a lot of defensive linemen in the NFL, with the exception, you know, maybe a Khalil Mack this past season who had a sack in 8 straight games, it's very rare that top tier guys are going to get automatically a sack every single contest, especially with the attention that they receive.
Well, I was looking at our line last year. I think Hank was more important than JPP in a way. Like, we beat Dallas because they couldn't run on us, and it's because they couldn't run on the interior. The second game, I believe, he was hurt, right?
JPP did not play the second Dallas game, correct.
Right, and we still beat Dallas. I love Linval Joseph. I live in Minnesota. I see him, you know, every week, and I think we let him go. I think we need to learn from that mistake. You just can't let go a really strong, young interior lineman for the potential of JPP. The money is not worth what he'll give us. I guess that's the what I'm trying to say. Like, I'd love him to come back for, you know, $10 million a year or whatever, but he wants top-end money, and I think we have so many other holes to fill that it's not worth giving him that money. And I think Big Hank is much more important. Am I wrong there?
No, I agree with you. I mean, I think based on the depth chart right now, you know, you could certainly make the case, though, that I think there's a little bit more of substance at defensive end behind JPP than perhaps what we've seen out of the defensive tackle spot, which is another part of the evaluation that you were alluding to. But here's the other thing, and this is what we don't know. The Giants, I'm sure, are having discussions right now to determine what the substance of the draft looks like. In the event that they lose one of those top-tier guys, Hankins or JPP, one of the things that I think the Giants need to ask themselves, Abdul, is if we relied on the draft, and let's say we don't want to make a big splash at that position in free agency, if we went to the draft, is there enough depth where we think we can get a quality playmaker who could come in year number one and make an immediate impact? That's something you have to ask yourself. If you don't see a lot of substance at defensive tackle and defensive end, then perhaps that's more of a reason why you want to bring back your top guys who you know what they're going to give you each and every game.
Fair enough. Second comment is: it seems like the left tackle suddenly being cut by teams is playing right into the Giants' hands. With Russell King being let go by Denver, the guy from Cincinnati, I think if Reese plays it right, we could get a really good left tackle.
Well, I mean, the Bengals didn't let anybody go. Their players hit free agency.
Oh, fair enough.
So the Giants can't even talk or do anything about Whitworth until you get to the free agency signing period. As for Okung, I think everyone kind of expected this to happen, mostly because of the way his contract was structured.
Yeah.
I don't think Russell Okung is a top-level left tackle where he's going to be a Pro Bowler, but I think right now he probably is a improvement over what's on the Giants roster, and the Giants did consider him last year. It was widely reported, and I think the Giants actually recognized the fact that he did come in here and talk to the team. So I think Okung could be in the mix, and I think it does give them another option, which is always a good thing.
Well, I'm really excited about next year. I feel like these Giants are kind of like the 85 Giants who lost to the Bears and came back next year and won. Like, we're so close. We're like two or three players away from being a dominant team, and I'm very excited for the offseason. Take care, guys.
All right, Abdul. Hey, appreciate the phone call.
201-939-4513. Let's go back to the phones and say, what's up to Ron in Georgia? What's going on, Ron?
Hey, what's going on, John, Lance? What's going on with y'all?
How are you? How's things with you?
I got offensive comment and a defensive question, so to speak. I know everybody's ragging on Flowers. I don't think Flowers was a good pick as far as Jerry Reese went in the draft. As far as the recent lineman he's picked in the draft, he's done a good job. And, I mean, if you move Flowers anywhere, whether it be guard, right tackle, and he excels, it's still a win at that position. As far as the defensive and with JPP and Hankins, you know, the debate we've been having about which to keep, do we keep both? How much does the secondary play into the fact of whether or not you keep JPP? Because we got a strong secondary, I believe one of the best secondaries in the league.
Well, you're talking about some of the cover guys that you have on the back end and whether or not they can continue their production if maybe you don't have as many playmakers in the front four. I mean, it's something you can consider, but here's the thing. You have to understand this, Ron. Whether you have great players on the back end or great players in the front end, it always goes hand in hand. No matter how effective your guys are on the back end, and I know we saw this specifically against the Cowboys. I mean, Dak Prescott barely had an opportunity to throw the ball down the field, and it didn't have much to do with pressure. It was just DRC, Jenkins, all those guys were on their opposing wide receivers and not allowing much separation. You can't, though, expect that to happen every single game is my point. So I would say you want a complementary defensive line to the back end, vice versa. You can't just assume, well, we get rid of JPP, they're going to be okay because Jenkins, DRC, and Eli Apple are good coverage guys. You just can't guarantee that that's going to happen every single game.
Honestly, look, Ron, you need both. You need to have pass rushers. You need to have cover guys. Both units help the other. It's a symbiotic relationship, and that's just how it works.
Like I completely understand that, but if, like, if we look at like the some of the recent Super Bowl teams, and I mean, you can either throw the Falcons in there because their run game was good. It's just the pass game was just that much better than their run game. At the end of the day, the running backs of the running game was winning. So wouldn't you want to have the presence on the interior? And then if you don't get JPP and you have some kind of stopgap like we used with Cullen Jenkins, those times when we were swapping DTs, when we had Linval Joseph and from Linval Joseph to Hankins till Hankins came on, would you be okay with a stopgap and maybe going with a backer that could protect the edge of the run game so your ends can focus on more passing situations? I'll take that off the air.
You got it, Ron. Appreciate the phone call. And this gets back to something that John and I spoke about yesterday, and I think a caller alluded to this about perhaps relying on specialists next season if you lose JPP. Players that are good against the run, players that are good against the pass. The problem is JPP's a combination of both. And I brought up the point that Spags doesn't have to worry about taking JPP off the field. He can keep him on the field regardless of the down. You go to the specialist, all of a sudden the philosophy completely changes.
Absolutely. And look, it's really hard to figure out, and this is a point that Abdul made too, Lance, which guy is more valuable and more important to the Giants' defensive line, Hankins or JPP. As someone that watches the games, watches the tape after the game, look, both guys do things well, and I think removing either one of them hurts the unit. But to say which one's more valuable, Hankins is younger, I mean,
You could argue, I guess, maybe he's been more durable, though he did miss half the year 2 years ago with his torn pec. JPP's kind of had more cranky things over the course of his career, though. In all but 2 years of his career, JPP played every game he was active for. He had the year last year where he played the final eight games after he came back from the hand. The year before that, I have JPP's game log right here. I was looking at it while we had Abdul on the line. He played 16 games his first 3 years. In 2013, he played 11 games. That was another year where he got hurt. He played 16 in 2014, half the games in 2015, again, because he came back late because of the hand. And then he missed the end of the year in 2016. So in terms of actual football injuries, he's only missed a total of 9 games over the course of his 7-year career. Now, he's had cranky stuff come up. He's played through stuff, and maybe that's affected his performance. He's a little bit older. He's taking a lot of snaps. All that stuff, no argument, agree. But to me, it's just a really, really hard thing to parse. All right, we got 5 minutes. I got to get both these calls in because Jeff Risden, who covers the NFL draft for Real GM, will join us in about 5 minutes. So Zach in Albany, you're up next. Hi, Zach.
How we doing, John? How we doing, Lance?
What's up, Zach? How's things with you?
Hey, I'm limited on time, so it kind of works out good. I'm just going to rack off a bunch of realistic free agents because I think a lot of people aren't real realistic about it.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking about DT3 technique, Paella from the Browns.
Okay.
A tight end nobody's talking about. I think he's from the Raiders. I forgot his name, like Rivera or something. And for a lengthy wide receiver, Justin Hunter, I'm thinking these are more guys in the range of what the Giants could afford. And the fact that I think they're kind of like Martellus Bennett types and Robert Harris types, where they're actually underachieved a little bit, and maybe they'll do better in a different system. Love the show, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you. Well, Michael Rivera is a tight end for the Raiders. This was the same caller that tweeted me about Justin Hunter earlier today. And Hunter's interesting. He's 6'3", so he's got some size. He played for the Titans. I forget his first team, but he played for
Titans
5 years.
Titans was the first team. Dolphins and the Bills.
Dolphins and the Bills. Sorry.
In between.
Right. So he played 3 for the Titans, then 1 for each of the other. And that was about a 5-year career for him. He's 26, I think. He's big. He just hasn't a lot of production in the NFL. Michael Rivera, 6'3", 245. He's 26. For the Raiders, he had 58 catches back in 2014, but only 50 combined in the prior 2 years.
Yeah, part of that is obviously the quarterback play that you have to take into consideration. Same thing, by the way, with Justin Hunter. You have to take into consideration the quarterback play as to why his production wasn't perhaps where it could be if he joined forces with an Eli Manning. Rivera, though, I love the point that Zach brought up, and this is my point. Rivera fits the mold of Martellus Bennett coming from the Cowboys to the Giants, that under-the-radar tight end that is looking for a bigger role, and maybe he can finally branch out if he's given the opportunity.
The only difference, Bennett was a second-round pick in the draft.
Of course.
A lot of physical talent. Rivera was, I think, a sixth-round pick, so not maybe as much upside there. But, yes, I see where you're coming from with that. And then Steven Paya, who went for the Bears, and I forget who he was with before the Bears, but he was a number one or two or three or four on the defensive line free agency list a couple years ago when he signed that contract. Now he's a free agent again. He kind of underachieved after that last contract, but he is the type of three technique that the Giants might need if – they can't bring back Jonathan Hankins. He was with the Redskins.
Yeah, he was in the division with the Redskins.
He was hurt a lot, I think, though.
He had been banged up throughout the course of his career. He's certainly a proven veteran, so, I mean, that makes him attractive. But, you know, once again, I don't know what the defensive tackle free agents are going to command on the market based on who's out there, too. I mean, Nick Fairley's another guy I throw out there, too. He's been taking one-year deals the last few years to try to see if he could get that long-term deal ever since he left Detroit. And, you know, he's a guy that brings a little bit more pass rush than some of the other defensive tackles that are on the market. And if you're going to go after a DT to complement Snacks, I think you also want a guy that can maybe get to the quarterback a little bit more often.
All right, let's go to Matt in Los Angeles before we bring in Jeff Risden from the RealGM.com, who covers the NFL draft. Matt, what's going on? You're in Los Angeles.
Hi, I just want to bring up a name that I don't feel like I've heard enough around Giants mock drafts, and that's tight end David Njoku from Miami. I just want to keep bringing up this name because I think he's a real game changer day one, and he's been climbing up a lot of the mock drafts, but I still think he could fall to the Giants at 23.
I think there's a good chance he's there at 23 also. I think the chance he'll be there at 23 at this point in 2 weeks will probably be a lot lower because he's going to test extremely well at the combine. A lot of people are going to start paying attention to him, and I think that's going to be a bad thing for teams that want to take him late in the first round. He's going to test really well.
Again, I said this yesterday. I'll repeat myself real quick, and we'll ask Jeff Risden about him too, Matt, when we have him in a couple of minutes, that he's great after the catch. He's a really good athlete. He's got good hands. He did run some pro-style stuff in Miami. He played in line. He played in the slot a lot more than he did on the line, but he did both. Didn't block a lot, but when he did, he was fine, has the body for it. It looks like he's strong. He's not the tallest. I think he's probably going to come in between 6'2 and 6'3, so he's not that, you know, 6'6, 6'5 tight end that maybe some teams are looking for in, you know, the realm of the Tony Gonzalez's, you know, that type of guy, the, you know, Graham from Seattle, obviously. So I think he's going to be a real good player. I'm not sure if he's going to be there at 23, but I'm sure it's something the Giants will take a close look at.
Well, if he's already being projected, and we've seen this, he's already being projected in that late first-round tier. And normally what happens is between the combine, remember, he's going to have a pro day too at Miami, then they start to all of a sudden gradually move up. So that's going to be bad news for the Giants, or Giants fans, I should say, because we actually, Matt, have heard a lot of phone calls about him. He's been talked an awful lot on this program, so he's not an unknown commodity. Fans are picking up on him, and I'm sure the rest of the league is going to shortly take notice as well.
And right now, I think consensus-wise, O.J. Howard is supposed to be the first tight end off the board. Remember, though, he jumped up a lot after his Senior Bowl performance. People were talking about him, but since Alabama didn't use him a ton as a receiver, people didn't know exactly how athletic he was. And at the combine, he's doing one-handed catches. I mean, at the Senior Bowl, he's doing one-handed catches all over the place. And, you know, he's making all these plays, and people had their eyes open. And I think you're going to see the same effect you had on O.J. Howard from the Senior Bowl is going to happen with Njoku after the combine. So it'll be interesting to see if two tight ends go that high in the draft in the top 20, or if one will be there when the Giants pick at 23.
Well, it's going to be rare if you look at the trends, but then again, this is a unique tight end class, so that's why I shy away from saying, oh, well, what happened in previous years is going to duplicate itself depending on what people think about the tight end prospects this season.
Well, now we can ask the same question that you guys have been asking us to our draft expert. That's Jeff Risden from Real GM, covers the NFL draft. Jeff, you're on with John Schmoke and Lance Meadow here in East Rutherford, New Jersey. How you doing today?
It's a pleasure to be on with you guys. Great to get talking to draft. We're almost to the combine. I'm excited to make my annual trip down to Indianapolis and see some of these guys actually work out for instead of just talking about them for a little while.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll be down there as well. Jeff, I hope to see you on Friday when you arrive. Couple questions, and we just got a call about the tight end class from one of our callers before you came on, and they asked about David Njoku, who right now is being projected as a bottom-of-the-first-round type of player. Do you expect him to stay in that range after the combine, or is he going to blow this thing up to the extent where he could be a guy that goes off the board in the teens when all is said and done?
Yeah, I really do think he's going to end up going in the teens, and I think the Giants are obviously in need of a tight end, and he would be a great pick there if he's still there. But if he's running a sub 4.6 40, and there are indications that he can do that and does well in some of the agility drills, at his age, with his potential upside, it's going to be hard for him to last longer than 14, 15 in that range, because there's a whole lot of need for playmaking tight ends in this league, not just the Giants. And he's got the potential to be a real good one. The upshot is this is the best tight end class I can ever recall. I've been covering the draft since 2004. There are so many good tight ends that can do any number of things in this draft. So you don't necessarily have to rush it there. But, yeah, man, Njoku, he's a fun one to watch.
So, realistically, Jeff, before we move on to different positions, could we have two tight ends in this draft go in the top 20, which historically is extremely rare, but with Njoku and Howard, do you think that's a legitimate possibility this year?
I absolutely do. And one of the reasons is that this is a terrible year for offensive tackles, and normally they're the guys who get stacked up pretty high. And I don't think you're going to see any – you might see Ryan Ramczyk out of Wisconsin taken in the top 20, and that will probably be it. So there's room that normally isn't there for unexpected positions. And Howard and Njoku are both they're both dripping with potential to start right away and be big contributors down the line and potential, you know, all-pro candidates there. I mean, these guys are really, really skilled. So, yeah, it's odd. It sounds strange to project two tight ends even in the top 12. Which I think you're going to see on a lot of mock drafts in the next couple of weeks.
Wow.
And, but, yeah, it's legit.
Jeff, you mentioned that it's the deepest tight end class. You also mentioned that these guys could do a variety of different things. But I guess from the Giants' perspective, and at least from their fan perspective, they're always looking for that dual threat tight end, the guy that can run down the field, receive it, and also block at the line of scrimmage. So who, in your opinion, is by far the all-around best tight end who could do both facets that I just threw out there?
Well, O.J. Howard would be the guy. Unfortunately, he's not going to be there when the Giants pick. If you're looking a little later, I really like Michael Roberts out of Toledo. I happen to be a Mac shill, so take that for what it's worth. But I saw him play in person. He's a legitimate 6'5", 265 pounds. He's played in line. He's played in the slot. He has hands that are almost a foot across, which is remarkable. He caught 16 tight touchdowns this year. That's double the amount of any other tight end in the country. He can block. It's not something that he was asked to do a great deal of at Toledo, but he's a guy that's going to go off in the middle rounds. Not going to be a wowing athlete. He's going to run probably in the 4.7s with perhaps the worst 10-second split of any of the tight ends that are there. That's not his game. He's not a quick guy. But he's a fantastic receiver down the field. Once he's moving, he's got good body control and just a huge target in the red zone and on short yardage. And we saw him down at the Senior Bowl and the Shrine Game. I was at both of those. He can blow people up at the second level if he wants to. So I'm really excited about him. He'd be a great fit there.
Where do you think
another guy? I'll throw him in. Blake Jarwin out of Oklahoma State. Another guy who's really good at chipping and releasing. He's fast. And long and can catch the ball and track it very well down the field. He's not going to be that short range option, but he's a guy who can stretch the seam for you.
How about Jake Butt? Where do you think he's going to go here? Obviously, he's coming back from that ACL. Who knows? He might have to take a redshirt year in his first year in the pros. You never know how these things recover. Where do you think he's eventually going to land, Jeff? And would you put him in the category as a dual threat tight end based on how Michigan used him over the course of his career there?
Yeah, he is a dual-threat tight end. He's very good at everything that you ask of a tight end. He is not a special athlete either, and that was before he tore his ACL, and that happened to be the second time he's torn that ACL in 3 years. So that really hurts where his draft projection is. This is a guy, had he come out last year, he might have been the number one tight end in the draft. This year he's going to struggle to get his name called in the fourth round. He could be a late day three guy just based on everything that's going on. My NFL comparison for him is happens to be a free agent, Jack Doyle, out of the Colts. They're very similar players. I know Michigan people really don't like that comparison, but that's not a knock. Jack Doyle's a pretty darn good player.
He is, I agree.
He's a quality NFL starter. I think Jake Butt can be that, but he definitely has an athletic feeling. And now with the injury factor in it, it's tough to see him going before, you know, fifth, maybe the sixth round.
I promise we'll move off tight ends after this question. The way the college football game has evolved, are we going to get to the point soon, and maybe Alabama will always be the exception because Nick Saban's there and the way he plays, and Wisconsin and other teams like that that play more of a pro style. Are we going to get to the point here where NFL teams, when they draft a tight end, are going to just have to say to themselves, you know what, we're going to have to teach this guy how to block here because tight ends simply aren't being asked to do that enough in college anymore, so we can't really properly evaluate how these guys are going to be a three-down player once they get to the National Football League?
I think that's definitely something that you need to look at when you're drafting one of these guys. If you're going to ask a guy like David Njoku to be an inline blocker more than, you know, 30% of the snaps, you're probably using him wrong because that's not what he's done. He doesn't have the experience for that. You better have an offensive line or a tight end coach, or preferably both, who are good teachers of technique. Not necessarily just guys that are going to teach you how to run routes, but guys who can show you how to block, you know, get the mechanics down, sinking your hips, you know, extending your arms out, staying engaged without holding. That's not something, like you said, most of these guys have not done that at the college level, and there is a learning curve on it. The flip side of it is you could be creative in the NFL and use them the way that they were used in college. That would be a different way to go about it. It doesn't seem that anybody really does that much yet, but I think that might be the ultimate solution for it.
Talking with Jeff Risley, who covers the NFL draft for Real GM. Jeff, I'll transition to a new position, and it's one that you alluded to earlier. You mentioned that you have not been impressed with the depth at the tackle position, and it's interesting that you brought that up because there's a lot of speculation that perhaps the Giants will bring in at least some competition to compete with Eric Flowers this offseason based on what they've seen out of him in the first 2 years. So if you're the Giants, based on what you see at the tackle position, is the wise game plan to perhaps go the route of free agency to bring in that competition? Or do you see maybe some mid-rounders at the tackle position that would be good value for the Giants to take some chances on?
Okay, in the situation the Giants are in, I would definitely go after free agency because you're looking for a guy that can play right away, and you're not going to get that out of the middle-round guys. There are some decent talent. I like Adam Biznovity out of Pittsburgh, I think, is a guy that can come in and play right tackle and do a reasonable job at it. There's some decent middle-round talent. Eric Magnuson out of Michigan, one of the biggest combine subs, is another guy who can come right in, I think, and play right tackle at a reasonable level. But if you're a playoff team right now, and you want to get over the hump, you're going to get that in free agency more than you're going to get it in the draft. You need somebody with a more proven NFL track record. Now, the free agent class this year isn't great either, but you've got a better shot at that than you do with going with the draft with some of these guys, because you're looking at guys, either they're right tackles or there's a lot of guys that need to add some weight if they're going to play in the NFL. Or there's one thing that's missing. And I think you see that with Flowers, and I think you know how that goes. So that's why you're in the same boat. And I would definitely go after a guy that's a little bit more proven.
If you decide to go with the offensive tackle in that first round, then I think there's a chance you won't see one offensive tackle picked in the top 20 if Ryan Ramczyk's hip injury scares a lot of people away. You got him, you have Garrett Bowles, you got Cam Robinson out of Alabama, but I can't imagine he's going to be a left tackle in the NFL. He seems more of a right tackle type to me. Then you have the Antonio Garcias of the world, the kid from Troy. Do you see any of these late first round, early second round tackles being able to step in year one and compete for a starting left tackle position in the NFL? Or are these guys players you're going to have to bring along slowly and eventually transition them to that position?
You can start Garcia at left tackle, and he's going to do a very good job of protecting your quarterback. But if you're asking him to run block, he's going to be on the ground a lot. he just really doesn't have any strength. If you want to watch a game from them, watch their bowl game against my alma mater, Ohio University, and Terrell Basham, the outside linebacker, who's also a second or third round pick. Every time that he tried to run block Basham put him on the ground and was good at making plays. And you saw down at the Senior Bowl, Garcia was very light. He's built like a tight end. I actually didn't realize that he was a tackle when I was standing next to him. I'm like, oh my goodness, he's slender. So he's got to add some strength, but he is a very quick tactician in pass protection. He'll keep Eli upright, but that's about all he's going to do. So if that's your biggest priority for it, then he's a guy that you can look at in that second round, maybe third round. I think he might fall a little bit if he still weighs 288 pounds and doesn't necessarily have the best explosive metrics either. For a guy like him, watch the broad jump and watch the vertical jump. So that's going to show what kind of an explosive athlete he is. If you're undersized at tackle, you better have those metrics kicked, and that's big for him. Yeah, he would be the best bet. Totally with you on Cam Robinson. That guy, if he's playing left tackle, you better have a very good backup quarterback.
Oh, boy. That's not necessarily something that you'd want to pat him on the back for. As we're talking with Jeff Risty, who covers the NFL draft for Real GM. Jeff, you've covered these prospects for quite some time, and I know you mentioned you're going down to the combine. This is more of a generic question, especially for maybe what the fans would look for if they're watching on television. How much does your opinion of not just offensive linemen and tight ends, but overall of all these positions, how much does it change or swing based on what you see out of the combine when you've really been studying them more from a game perspective and what they do? How much does the combine change your overall opinion?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And unfortunately, the waffle answer is it does vary from player to player. The biggest thing that I'm looking for, aside from the medicals, which I think are huge, and are probably the biggest thing that knocks people down at the combine, is you're looking at athletic potential. And you marry that with what you see on the field on tape. If a guy has been, sort of a so-so college performer but has really impressive athletic metrics, then you say, well, maybe this is a guy that can develop some at the next level. The counter to that is if you see a guy who's a really good college football player but his measurables and athletic metrics just don't measure up, you think, well, this guy has a little bit more limitations on him as what he can do at the NFL. He has a lower ceiling. And that tends to get you drafted lower than I think you should in the NFL. But that, if you're looking for
projecting where guys are going to go, that's a very big thing. So I'd say it's probably about 20% of what I want to see. And it's not like the drills are largely meaningless when they're doing the wide receivers are catching the gauntlet drill and the tackles are running. That's great for TV. It's fun to watch, but it really doesn't show me anything about what they're going to do in the NFL.
Jeff, last year everyone talked about how you could get a starting or top quality defensive tackle even on the third day in the fourth or fifth round. That's how deep that position was. Is there a position in this year's draft that's that deep?
I think running back is. There's a whole lot of good running backs in this class. You look at the top, I mean, everybody knows Fournette, Dalvin Cook. But the guys at the next tier for me are guys like Jeremy McNichols out of Boise State, who unfortunately is not going to participate in the combine. He's injured. Kareem Hunt out of Toledo, very good back, lit it up during Senior Bowl week and got a whole lot of fans. But you can go deeper than that. I mean, there's guys like Itamus Mathers from Middle Tennessee State. Jamal Williams out of BYU. All these guys are going to be very good contributors at the NFL level. You can see a whole bunch of good NFL running backs come off the board in the third day. That and safety. I think this is a very good safety class. Good year to need that, which isn't necessarily a thing that the Giants could look at. But if you're looking, to get some insurance back there, it's not a bad year to take one of those guys on day three either.
Paul Dottino, one of our other hosts that's not on today, would kill me if I didn't ask you about the specific player he loves. How about the P. Ryan kid out of Oklahoma? Where do you see him falling in this draft?
This is a guy that, we just talked about the athletic metrics. I want to see what he runs because I don't think he's all that fast. Now, he's big, and that's not the speed isn't necessarily his game. But this is a guy that I want to see do the short shuttle, the three-cone drill, to test his lateral quickness because he has a lot of things that you really like, but he's the guy that gets caught from behind a lot on tape, and that's troubling. If you're looking for a bruising back, I think he's very, very good. Probably, I'm going to say, if he runs faster than 4.6 in the 40, and he should, then you're looking at a third-round guy.
Well, on that topic, Jeff, if you look at the Giants' current roster, they parted ways with Rashad Jennings. Paul Perkins is in line to be the main back, and he's a shifty guy, can run to the outside. So do you have another big back, a big bruiser in mind that you think perhaps could be a good fit for the Giants, and maybe you can grab him in the fourth or the fifth round or something like that?
Yeah, Deontay Foreman out of Texas. Now, I'll preface this by saying I'm not a big fan of his. In fact, my working comparison for him, for your older listeners, is Kevin Mack of the Cleveland Browns.
Oh, yeah, I remember Kevin Mack, absolutely.
But he's a guy, if you need a guy to get you 3 yards on third and two between the tackles, he can do it. He's also going to get you 3 yards on first and ten if you run in between the tackles. So that's your trade-off there. You have to use him situationally, but he's definitely got some potential and a very good short yardage runner in the red zone, which is something that every team needs.
And I realize it's a tough question to answer now with, free agency still to happen and the combine and all that other jazz, Jeff. But when you look at this class and you see where the Giants are picking at 23, if they're going to try to maximize their value at that position in the draft in the first round, what do you think is a position group that fans should pay attention to where you think it's likely the Giants might find the best player available when they get up to that podium to make that pick at number 23 in the first round?
Well, on the spot, I would say pass rusher.
Okay.
If you can get a guy like Derek Barnett out of Tennessee, there's some other guys that fall into that range. Taco Charlton out of Michigan is another guy that definitely has a lot of potential. If the board falls that way, I think that's a great way to go. Safety is another one. Again, you got Landon Collins, so you don't necessarily need a playmaking safety, but that's a good group. And you're starting to get in the area where wide receiver is an interesting fit. If you see Mike Williams from Clemson and Corey Davis off the board, before that, then there is a gap, a definite gap between those two and the next tier of wide receivers. Mm-hmm. If you want to get at the top of that tier, you got to take them right there at 23. That's a guy like John Ross, Taywan Taylor, Carlos Henderson out of Louisiana Tech's getting a lot of burn lately. I think he's going to do very well for himself next week. That's the range because those guys will probably not be there when the Giants' name comes up again in the second round.
Jeff, you mentioned pass rusher for the Giants potentially as a place that they can maximize value at 23. And you know, the Giants obviously have two big free agents, Jonathan Hankins and JPP. And, you know, the fans are trying to determine if they were to lose one of the two, you know, where could they make up and fill the void? So with that being said, do you see more depth in this draft from the defensive end position?
Good question.
Or do you see more depth at the defensive tackle position? And when I say defensive tackle position, I'm also referring to, Jeff, a guy that you think could get to the quarterback and also stuff the run when taking that into consideration.
Yeah, I think the end is a little bit better. The tackle group, there's a lot of solid guys in this class, especially in like the middle rounds, guys like Tanzel Smart out of Tulane, Stevie Tuikolavatu, I hope I said that right, out of USC, more of a nose tackle guy, but an active guy. Jaleel Johnson out of Iowa is a guy. Actually, he's a guy that would look pretty good in the first round there for the Giants if he tests well. He might be a little white in contrast to what Jonathan Hankins has been, but a similar sort of style of player. Yeah, you're looking at ends there. You can get a whole lot of value in the first, second, even later guys. There's some projects in this class. Guy like Dietrich Wise out of Arkansas, really good player, lit up the Shrine Game, was the best defensive end I've seen at the Shrine Game. I've been there 6 years. Was basically unblockable and showed it in the game, too. At Arkansas, he got banged up quite a bit. You know, he had like something. You know, he had a minor hip here or an ankle there. If you can keep him on the board, there's a guy who you can come off in the third, maybe the fourth round, and can probably start for you right away. So I really like the end class here.
Final question for me, Jeff, and I'm a little surprised that you haven't brought up the cornerback position yet, because I've read a lot of other people raving about how great this cornerback position is. You're going to be able to get a good corner, you know, on day two, maybe even the early parts of day number three. What's your overall take on the cornerback class and exactly how deep this group is? And if you want a good one, how early do you have to pick one?
Yeah, I'm not as high on, like, the top-end guys as most people are. I don't see a top 10 or even the top 15 talent here.
Wow.
But like, that next tier, like when you're looking at from the middle of the first round through, like, the middle of the third round, there's a whole lot of guys in that range for me. And you can get, second round, you'll be able to find a good corner. Not the top guys, guys like Sidney Jones, the two Ohio State guys, Conley and then Lattimore, will be gone. But you can get a guy like Jordan Lewis out of Michigan as a guy. He's going to get dinged for his size. He's going to have to play inside in the NFL. That guy can be an instant starter at slot corner and a playmaker and a very good guy against the run. So you can find a whole lot of useful guys, not necessarily stars, but guys who are going to be great number two cornerbacks in the NFL, in my opinion, in those middle rounds. You don't need to rush that one in the first round. With the depth the way it is, and there's so little stratification between like the top tier and the third tier, you know, one guy's number one is going to be another guy's number seven.
Wow.
And I think that means you can get value and find guys that your coaching staff clicks with when they're interviewing with these guys and when they see them at their pro days.
Talking with Jeff Rizzi, who covers the NFL draft for Real GM. Jeff, before we let you go, one other position that we didn't cover is the linebacker position. And the Giants do have a notable free agent in Keenan Robinson, but they seem to have some depth there. What does the linebacker position look like when it comes to the draft and in terms of the depth?
Yeah, you're looking top-heavy. Reuben Foster and Zach Cunningham from the SEC. Foster's out of Alabama. He's hurt a little bit. An Alabama defender is getting hurt always gives you pause because that seems to be a recurring theme. Cunningham from Vanderbilt, do-it-all linebacker. The next tier down, you're looking at guys that probably have one hole. You know, you're looking at them as a situational backer. Are they a cover backer? Are they a pass-rushing backer? It's good, but you're probably going to see a break, especially in the off-the-ball linebackers, from those two to possibly even the third round before you see another guy called. But then there's a whole lot of guys that are in that, you know, third, fourth, fifth round that I think can be very good NFL contributors. And that seems to be a good spot for where the Giants like to pick people. So, I know they don't draft linebackers early there. It would be nice to replenish it because Keenan Robinson – You tell me, because I have to evaluate him as a free agent. I think he's better than what Giants fans thought he was. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, you know what, Jeff? We agree. We think Keenan Robinson, especially coming in here, I think Giant fans were worried about his ability to stay healthy first and foremost, given his injury history. He stayed healthy the whole year, and he was basically their Mike linebacker in passing situations, which, as you know, in the NFL is basically 75% of the time now. So he was on the field a lot. He covered tight ends pretty well down the field. I thought he was he's not a guy that's going to come downhill and wacky and take contact, but he can cover, and he's a pretty mobile guy back there that can help you in coverage in passing situations.
That seems to be what every NFL team needs, and if the Giants lose him, they definitely need to replace that fairly early in the draft. Not first or second round, but yeah, those middle round guys. I'll give you a late round sleeper. I'll show again for my alma mater, Ohio University, Blair Brown, who will be at the combine. He's undersized. If you want to watch something, watch him play Tennessee and watch him drop Alvin Kamara for a loss two plays in a row. A guy who is a big time darling of the draft media in Alvin Kamara. Blair Brown, very good cover linebacker who can blitz, would be a nice fit. Probably going to, because he's 5'11 and 230 some pounds, he's going to be a sixth or seventh round pick. You can find guys like that for this draft who are going to be able to step right in and play situational roles like that.
Jeff, I hope there's a section on your site where you have, like, the top 10 Bobcats to look out for in the upcoming draft.
I'm just excited that we finally have somebody. I mean, like, the last player that we had drafted was T.J. Carey, who's not a very good corner for the Raiders. So it's nice to have somebody who's actually pretty good going into the NFL for once for my school, which won six games in my six falls there in the early 90s.
If you want more from Jeff Risdon, check it out on Twitter at Jeff Risdon, R-I-S-D-O-N, all one word with the Jeff. And again, he writes for Real GM. Jeff, great stuff. I'll catch up with you at the combine. Maybe we'll have you on again. Thanks so much for the time. We'll definitely catch up to you before the draft, all right?
Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Thanks so much, guys. I'll see you next week.
Great stuff. Appreciate it, man. Jeff Risdon, Real GM, at Jeff Risdon on Twitter. In fact, he was just putting up, I believe, last night. He put up the couple of tackles that Brown had against Tennessee, if I'm not mistaken. He actually posted a video up there, which is good. Yeah, there's one of the couple of the plays right there. Blair Brown making the plays on the Tennessee running back. So, good follow-up as he puts the game tape up there. And a lot of times people don't put that up there when they talk about the players, but he's a great follow on Twitter, and we've added him to our long list of draft experts that we'll have on over the course of the next couple of months.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of good insight that he provided. Interesting to note, just to rehash a little bit about what he talked in case you're just joining us, not a lot of depth, that tackle position. He's not very fond of that position. And, Giants fans who constantly call up and talk about that position and wanting more competition, perhaps that makes the urgency of free agency a little bit more important at that position, much more so than maybe what you get out of the draft. That, I think, was one of the biggest takeaways that I took away there.
Yeah, and you can maybe find the right tackle. Seems to be more of those out there, but if you're looking for a left tackle, especially in year number one, might be a little rough.
Yeah. I mean, that was certainly something interesting that he brought up. And, he seems to be pretty high in terms of some of the depth at the pass rusher position, mm-hmm. that perhaps he could find some decent guys that could come in and could contribute in year one in the event that you lose a decent free agent.
And by the way, for all the fans out there that are trying to convince us that the Giants should take a running back in the first round of the draft, he made the point, day two, even early day three in rounds four and five, he thinks you can find a very good running back. And remember, the Giants are looking for a guy to get 20, 25 carries here. They have Vereen. They have Paul Perkins. So if you're looking for that complimentary back, especially, as you mentioned, the bruiser type, you can find one in the middle rounds.
Yeah, I don't think you're necessarily in a position this year where you have to take Zeke Elliott
no.
in the top five, or else all of a sudden your running game is not going to be able to get to where you want it to be. I think, as we saw it, even Paul Perkins, I think, is a good example. Now, Paul Perkins was a fifth-round pick last year, mm-hmm. and nobody even knew what his role was going to be based on Rashad Jennings and Shane Vereen's presence, and he got his number called late because of injuries, and he's flourished. You'd like to see him continue. There's no guarantee, but I think there's some promise in the Giants and some of the late running backs that they've took, at least in most recent history, compared to last year.
Yeah, absolutely. So, look, it's always tough to figure out exactly where to go in these rounds. There's a lot of projection involved. The draft boards are nowhere near done, and of course, we'll be getting to the combine next week, and I already have a bunch of guests, probably have around 10 guests over the first three of the 3 days we're out there. I'll try to get a few more as we move along. And we'll do free agency too, because Peter King brought this up in his MMQB story. I'm not sure if you read it. He goes, he doesn't get it. Why would you move the combine back a week? Because it basically is buttressing up right against free agency now, instead of having the week in between to digest the combine and then do free agency. I mean, you have the combine. We get back the following Wednesday,
Thursday for agency starts?
Well, March 9th is the start of free agency.
Yeah, I mean, so you're looking at free agency then starting on the Thursday. The Thursday after the combine. The combine's not over till that Monday. That's when the last event happens. Maybe even, I think, Tuesday they have interviews and stuff still, but I think the last events are on Monday. So, I mean, you're looking at 3 days between the end of the combine and the free agency. That is such a quick about face.
Yeah.
For the NFL, where usually in the offseason they like to spread their events out. So you have something in February with the combine. Then you get, you know, free agency in March. April you have the draft, and it's spread out. I don't like the way these two things are kind of put up against each other.
Well, and like you said, it'd be nice if team executives would have about a week just to now digest, okay, this is what we saw at the combine. We're not sold on this position. We should now look at this position in free agency. You want an opportunity to just digest what you've seen and digest what you've observed. Now this is really going wall to wall, essentially, from the combine to free agency. But you know what? The positive is NFL teams were aware of the schedule way in advance. So, I mean, this wasn't a curveball that caught them at the last second. They planned, I'm sure, accordingly, and this is what you have to go with it. And from the fan perspective, I mean, listen, you're going from the combine right to free agency. So these next 2 weeks, there's going to be plenty of news. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah, and finally, look, there's always business done at the combine anyway, but it's going to be on Express this year.
Yeah.
You know, these GMs are going to be there to look at these draft prospects, sure. But at the same time, they're going to be talking to player agents. They're going to be talking
trades
to their fellow general managers and everyone else there. This is going to be a very, very business-oriented NFL draft combine. We're not just looking at players, but you're trying to conduct your business with veterans and free agents as well.
Which could very well change the game plan of teams in the blink of an eye. Because if you go into the combine thinking, hey, we're going to speak to this GM and we're hoping we could pull off a trade, now all of a sudden you realize we've got to address the matter in free agency, maybe that changes the market. So that's something to look out for. You know, players who were thinking about re-upping with their own teams, maybe now they get an additional call or two because they think now there's more interest since GMs weren't able to pull off trades that they were anticipating at the combine. So I think that that's something to keep a close eye on over the next 2 weeks.
Absolutely. Lance, great stuff.
You got it.
Good job by the callers. Thank you to Jeff Risden from Real GM. And, of course, you can follow him on Twitter at Jeff Risden. Great stuff on the draft. Thanks for joining us. Next week, Monday and Tuesday, Dottino and Meadow. Wednesday, I'm solo from the combine. Thursday and Friday, I am with – oh, I got Feagles on Tuesday next week. Gosh darn
you
know, it.
You were patting yourself on the back yesterday.
Shoot.
Because you got all the hosts right.
Shoot.
And then that lasted 24 hours.
Yeah.
And then you went back to your old tricks and you screwed it
so
up.
So you have Dottino and Meadow on Monday.
Yes.
Meadow and Feagles on Tuesday.
Correct.
I will be solo at the combine on Wednesday. Dottino will grace us with his presence in Indianapolis on Thursday afternoon. And then me and Paul will be together on Friday afternoon as well. And again, the show's Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday next week. We're all 2 hours, 12 to 2 on Giants.com. We'll have all the interviews posted separately together as a show. They'll be up on iTunes, the whole nine yards. For Lance Meadow, I'm John Schmoe. Thank you for joining us. Have a great weekend, everybody. It should be some beautiful weather. Go out there and enjoy it. And we'll see you on Monday for more Big Blue Kickoff Live.